As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, counsel for the appellant, just approach the microphone, adjust the podium to your level, and please begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Maricela Cantu. I'm the attorney for the appellant. This is a case about a termination of parental rights. The appellant, Mr. Lopez, is the adjudicated father of four small children, Ronnie, age 6, Remy, age 3, and two twin boys named Rudy and Ralphie, age 1. The oldest child, Ronnie, was the only child born at the time when the children came to the attention of Child Protection in 2015. He was living with his mother at the time and not with the appellant. On November 24th, 2015, Ronnie was removed from his mother's care and placed in the care of the appellant because she had relied on an inappropriate man named Mr. Garcia Rico, with whom she was living with, to be the caretaker of the children. He was very ill at that time. He had a stroke and vascular dementia, and he was in no condition to be a caretaker to the children. Then on March 10th, 2016, the second child, Remy, was born. He was placed on hold and ordered into the outgoing care of home placement. Ronnie, the first child, was eventually returned to his mother on June 9th, 2016, with conditions that the children should not be allowed to be in the care of Mr. Garcia Rico, and that they should not be in the vehicle with him when he's driving because of his medical conditions. On February 2nd, 2017, Ronnie, the oldest child, was in a car accident with his mother while Mr. Garcia Rico was driving. Ronnie and Remy were placed under protective supervision, and they were. And then on August 3rd, 2017, the mother had transferred her sole legal and physical custody to the appellant. Under that custody order, there were certain conditions to be met. The mother would have could have reasonable supervised visitation, parenting time at two specific centers, family-wise and perspectives. The parents could agree to more supervised parenting time, but they would be responsible for payments at those centers. During that time, there is also an order of protection that was involving the mother and the appellant, and they were supposed to follow the conditions of that order for protection. If there was a change in status of that order of protection, if it was dismissed, modified, or expired, the mother would have reasonable visitation time coordinated based on her sobriety and stable mental health. Sometime in 2017, this order for protection was adopted by the district court. In the termination of parental rights trial, the district court, none of the parties entered this order for protection, but there was a lot of references made because there was a trial prior to the appellant's termination of parental rights. The mother had a termination of parental rights prior to his trial, and that order was entered. So there was a lot of reference by the district court to the exhibits in the other trial related to the mother. On September 19, 2017, the twins were born, Rudy and Rafi. They did not go live with their mother. They went into out-of-home placement. They were not placed with
father. Ms. Cantu, I think we're all familiar with the facts. I was wondering if you could get to the heart of the argument. It seems to me, you know, the strongest basis to affirm the termination is the failure to correct conditions leading to the out-of-home placement. The courts seem to place a lot of stress on the fact that he wasn't credible in testifying that he didn't violate the OFP, and the OFP was put in place to protect the children from the mother, and if he doesn't appreciate the necessity for keeping the children away from the mother, then that would be grounds for termination. Why is that holding wrong?
And, Your Honors, I don't necessarily agree with the fact that the order for protection was in place to protect the mother from the children. It's my understanding that the order for protection was in place between the mother and the father solely. And the reason being was that the mother had made some allegations that the appendant or the appellant had sexually abused her. Now, unfortunately, because
when the concern was that the appellant was allowing mother to see the children in his presence, and there was a concern without supervised parenting time. It wasn't supervised. And I think, it wasn't the court's real concern that the father, the appellant, didn't appreciate the mother's poor decision-making, and a concern that the appellant may allow mother to have contact with the children in the future, and the children would be in an unsafe situation. It wasn't so much the violation of the OFP or the temporary legal custody order, but the underlying concern about the safety for the children and the appellant's lack of recognition of that.
Yes, that was the reason that the department had initiated their termination of parental rights, and they amended the CHIPS petition specifically because of that condition. And
is that finding supported by the evidence in the record?
Well, there was a trial, and Mr. Lopez testified. The way that this fact was found out, or that the mother was potentially having unsupervised visitation in appellant's home, was that the foster mother found pictures on one of the children's cell phone of mother inside appellant's home. The district court found that it was more credible than not that these visitations were occurring. I don't think that there was any fact-finding as to the specific dates. They're just a sort of a generalization that sometime in January to April, when these children were taken out of the appellant's home, that visitation was occurring. And our primary argument, Your Honors, is that the custody order had already placed in its provisions and had considered what would happen when the order for protection would be dismissed, modified, or when it would expire. And on May 7th, 2018, the mother dismissed her order for protection entirely. And when you terminate the parental rights of a child, or a parent and a child, you look at the conditions at the time of trial. And so if you're looking at the conditions at trial, that order for protection was dismissed. And what the custody order did allow was for a modified parenting time between the mother and the children. And that modified parenting time, she could have reasonable visitation time conditioned on her sobriety and stable mental health. And so looking at whether if he were to continue with that pattern of allowing mother to see the children in the home, he would not be in violation of that parenting time. She is able to have reasonable parenting time unsupervised.
But even with the withdrawal of the OFP, there still is an underlying concern about both the father's ability to make safe decisions and the mother's ability to safely parent. The withdrawal of the OFP doesn't eliminate those concerns. So what evidence is there in the record to show that the father has addressed those issues, and why was the district court's finding that the father hadn't addressed those issues clearly erroneous?
If you look at the time frame of when the termination of parental rights was filed, or the, and actually when the amended CHIPS was filed against him and the termination of parental rights was filed against him, he was given approximately 43 days to correct the conditions.
The children and how are you calculating the 43 days?
I'm calculating 43 days by the department filed an amended CHIPS, Child in Need of Protective Services, on March 21st, 2018. That is located in Appendix A2. Then the appellant first appeared on that matter on February 7th, 2018. And then a termination of parental rights petition was filed by the department on March 22nd, 2018. So 43 days to correct the conditions that led to the out of place placement of these children.
Didn't he have, up until the time of trial, it appears the court considered evidence up until, you know, through the trial actually, as to whether or not he had corrected the conditions.
And the court found that he followed his case plan. There, when you look at the court's analysis of being palpably fit, the court notes that he followed his case plan, that presumption of being palpably unfit did not exist.
Didn't the court also find that he didn't go for the psychological assessment until October, even though it was first offered to him in April?
The court found that he was slow, yes. But is that a good reason to terminate?
That a factor to consider in terms of whether he had sufficient time, his own delay?
I think it's one of the factors that you can consider, but he did complete the psychological evaluation, and the psychological evaluation didn't find anything significant. If you look at the testimony of the social worker and the guardian ad litem, they agree that the appellant can parent both Ronnie and Remy, who are the two oldest children, and that he's created a significant bond with them. Their only concerns was the twins, who were age one, one had asthma, one had allergies, and they were concerned because they had never been in the placement of the appellant home for him to demonstrate that he was able to parent all four children.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the guardian ad litem and social worker also had concerns. Well, they said he would be able to parent the two older children. I thought they also had concerns about whether he would be making safe decisions for those children and whether, and so in that regard, they recommended against him maintaining parental rights.
They again make reference to the order for protection that was in place and that for appellant not to allow the mother to have unsupervised visitation. At the time, there was no order requiring that she was supposed to have supervised visitation with the children. And there was no evidence that during the supervised visitation that anything harmful happened to the children. The concern with the mother was that she was allowing somebody else to parent the children, or to be a caretaker for the children who was significantly sick. And I believe within this proceeding, he didn't end up passing away and was no longer being a caretaker or potentially a caretaker for the children. And so that was the concern with the mother making poor decision-making. The only poor decision-making that the court looks at with the appellant was that he allowed that unsupervised visitation time. The court did not allow the appellant sufficient time to demonstrate that he would not continue with that. In fact, the appellant testified that he would not be co-parenting the children with the mother and had no plans to do so, that he was not in a relationship with her. And so the appellant, the only evidence the appellant was able to provide was his agreement that he would not co-parent with the mother. The children were taken out of the home in April, and they were never returned to him. To give the appellant an opportunity to show the department that he would make sure that the children would not have any unsupervised parenting time with their mother. I see that my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Cantu. You will have a rebuttal. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Assistant Hennepin County Attorney Elizabeth Johnston. I represent the respondent in this matter. Mr. Lopez's challenges to the court's findings regarding whether he neglected parental duties or was palpably unfit to continue in the parent-child relationship largely involve the assertion that because the mother had dismissed the order for protection and the TLC permitted reasonable visitation, that there could be no further concern with Mr. Lopez's parenting ability to parent the children. As I noted in the brief, and I think as some of the court's questions have gone to, although the OFP and the TLC order are repeatedly referenced, by themselves, they are not the issue. As Your Honor, Judge Cochran mentioned, the issue in which the court makes clear throughout its order is Mr. Lopez's ability to recognize the mother as an unsafe caregiver and to follow through on protecting the children from that. The OFP, the TLC, I think got shorthanded or used as shorthand for insisting that the father create those protective conditions, but that by themselves, they are not the issue. As Your Honor mentioned, Judge Cochran, just because the order for protection may have gone away, the underlying issue doesn't necessarily. The TLC order, I think if you look at it, what is abundantly clear is that the court is hoping and insisting, in fact, that there will only be supervised contact with the mother for quite some period of time, because it is assuming that that OFP will stay in place for the period of the order for protection. It's been there for a long time. The TLC order also does not sort of automatically convert to unsupervised visits upon the OFP expiring or being dismissed. Rather, the TLC order permits, as transfers of legal custody do by law, reasonable visitation, conditioned, yes, at a minimum on her sobriety and mental health stability, but also on the custodian, Mr. Lopez's, assurance of the safety of those relationships. That is his job as the custodian.
So what evidence in the record supports the district court's conclusion that the father has not remedied the underlying conditions that led to the out-of-home placement?
So starting from this position that the underlying condition that required the out-of-home placement of the children involved Mr. Lopez's inability to recognize and be adequately protective of the children from the mother and her unsafe decision-making. I think there's testimony from both the social worker and from the guardian ad litem that goes back to 2016, where Mr. Lopez has been involved in child protection proceedings with one or more of these children since 2015. And when Ronnie, if I'm mispronouncing it, I apologize, was placed with him in that initial time period, the court order was that he's placed with Mr. Lopez and that Mr. Lopez care for the child. Rather, Mr. Lopez sent the child back to mom for caretaking throughout the summer, Nobody knew about this until sometime later, but that was the solution that he reached for childcare during 2016. That was one of the Guardian's specific sort of underlying examples of why she was concerned about it. As the case went on, he had
Did anything happen to the children that summer when they were with the mother?
Well, in that initial case involving Roni, and then Remy was sort of part of that, she did put them in the care of the father of the oldest, her oldest child, who had vascular dementia and significant health problems where he was patently unsafe. And after multiple directions from the court, from the department, from medical professionals that she not do this, she continued to do it. She, when given assistance to, and some of this is detailed in the termination of parental rights order that was affirmed by this court with respect to mother. When she was given assistance by the department to set up alternative childcare, she didn't do that. She turned to this unsafe person instead. There were concerns about her parenting during supervised visits that were discussed in that trial and that led in part to the termination of her parental rights. Among the things that the district court found in this order was that mother had done nothing, and in fact maybe it made it worse, but had done nothing to change the court's pretty recently issued opinion as to her fitness as a parent. Specifically, I believe the court noted, and also the Guardian in her testimony, that if anything, it had more concerns about mother's insight into her deficits and ability to correct them based on the fact that after an entire trial where her veracity was discussed and it was pointed out that that was important, she came into court and testified again to something. Well, she testified that she had not had the contact with Mr. Lopez and the children in the home that the court had already had an entire hearing on, that she had admitted to, that the court had made findings about. And it was that testimony, among other things, that led the court to say, not only do I think mother is unreliable and I hold on to my opinion that she is unsafe and unfit, but it also causes me to place limited weight on any evidence to the contrary, because she is the primary reporter to her therapist, for example, to her parenting worker, for example, and she doesn't tell the truth. So if she doesn't tell the truth, then their opinion as to her progress is difficult to rely on. They can say she
Back
showed up on Thursday.
Back to appellant, what evidence supports the conclusion that he will not provide a safe environment for the children or will not leave the children with appropriate caregivers ongoing basis?
Yes, so there are several of these instances. There's the 2016 instance. There's what began to occur in early 2018 after there have been multiple reminders from the court and the department that mother is not to be the caretaker, where he's clearly allowing that unsupervised contact in his home as well as in public. There's testimony to those pieces. Even after the children are removed from his care, and it is again made abundantly clear in every court proceeding, in every pre-hearing report, the whole part of this case is you need to pay attention to this. Your children are being removed from you because you are acting inappropriately with respect to the mother as their caregiver. He continues to view her as an integral piece of their family. He has the social worker testify to this, and it was, I believe, credited by the court, that he had specific pieces of information that he wouldn't know but for ongoing contact with the mother. When a family group conference was scheduled to talk about possible permanency solutions, and then it sort of morphed into how Mr. Lopez dealt with the foster parent, he insisted that mother be part of that family group conference because she's their mother. So with two specific overtime, despite warnings, instances of Mr. Lopez turning to mother as the caretaker, and then these instances where he continues to insist, even to the department, that she participate, that raised concern with the department, with the guardian, and ultimately with the court, that he's not understanding, he's not internalizing, or at least he's not intending to abide by this direction that mother is not an appropriate caretaker. I think what further contributes to that and to the understanding that, or the court's conclusion that it could not trust or credit Mr. Lopez's assertion that he did believe it, he would do differently, was in fact his mental health and parenting evaluation that was received, where he simply lied to the evaluator about his contact with mother. This is the basis for his ongoing services, and if they're starting from a point of I'm either lying or I'm not recognizing or some combination of those things, it's difficult to think that services are going to be very effective.
Counsel, I want to go back to the time frame here in terms of the reasonable efforts. The argument here is that father wasn't given enough time to comply with the most recent case plan and to correct the conditions. And I understand that after the TPR is filed and before trial, there's still some time, but was he given enough time? It does seem to the time was jammed up there a bit.
Yes, Your Honor, he was given enough time. And I believe I did cite at least one case in my brief that speaks to a shorter time frame being sufficient. It's in my brief. I believe it was 5 months. And in this case, the court specifically noted that there were 7 months between the filing of the petition and when trial occurred, and that it was considering that time period. The court also discussed the fact that this was not Mr. Lopez's first involvement in this case or first exposure to what he needed to do to demonstrate to the department that he was a fit and suitable caretaker. In fact, the case plan that he was offered with respect to this case was pretty much identical to the case plan or the conditions of protective supervision that he had been subject to since 2015, more or less. The difference being that he was requested to do a more comprehensive mental health and parenting evaluation in order to figure out what services could be offered that might help him internalize the department's and the court's concerns about his ability to keep the children safe, and to help him figure that out. That referral, that aspect of the case plan, both were made almost immediately upon the filing. There is evidence in the record from the testimony of the social worker that the multiple sessions of that evaluation typically are conducted pretty back-to-back and in a pretty short time frame. They could have been done as soon as May, which would have given him 6 months to begin working on things. Rather, he delayed scheduling. He was not available for consecutive scheduling, or scheduling everything in one chunk so that he could do it quickly.
Do you agree that the evaluation didn't identify any concerns?
That's not accurate. The evaluation, and this was reflected then also in the testimony of the guardian and the social worker, said that Mr. Lopez views himself as a provider in the sense of, I bring home the bacon, that kind of provider, but that there were concerns for his ability to provide emotionally and to make decisions for the children. Those are two different things, and in fact, it is his ability to make decisions, to make safe decisions, to be a full parent, not just a provider, that was at the heart of this case. And some of that concern you see maybe evidence of in his slowness or maybe refusal to acknowledge the specific needs of Rudy and Rafi with respect to their allergies. That even after multiple attempts to educate him as to the seriousness of the allergies, the need to be aware of them. He went to a medical appointment for the twins shortly before trial and told the medical provider, that there weren't allergies. The medical provider corrected him and said, no, and this is important. But these pieces, this sort of internalizing his responsibility to be the full parent, to be protective in every possible way, wasn't happening. It wasn't happening with respect to mom, with respect to safe caretakers, with respect to knowing the needs of the children. And with all of that put together, and then the fact that although he had touched on each aspect of his case plan, he had barely begun individual therapy. The mental health and parenting evaluation hadn't been provided to his parenting worker. And it contained lies about his relationship with mom. So all of those things support the court's determination that he was not a safe caretaker and that he had not progressed far enough in his services, in his internalization and understanding and wish to progress in the needs of the children and in his case plan, to think that he would get there anytime in the foreseeable future. See, my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnston. Ms. Cantu, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you. As the opposing counsel has pointed out, the appellant has been involved in child protection proceedings, which started in 2015. If you look at his history from 2015 to 2018, he was an excellent parent, such so that the department placed both Ronnie and Remy in his care. And so he was doing very well in his case plan. There were no concerns about his parenting of the children. The only issue that arised was the unsupervised visitation time with mom.
Well, I'm not sure that was the only issue. I mean, there was a concern about the allergies. There was also a period of time where he didn't visit the twins after they were born.
Yes, and I think the record could support different conclusions. The appellant had gone to appointments. He had received training on how to use an EpiPen. He had received some training from the doctor on what kind of illnesses the children were having. He went to the emergency rooms with them. He was not certain that these children were his biological children, and so he requested from the department to have a paternity test done. And once the paternity test came back that knowing that he was the biological father of these children, and once the children were removed, he was having consistent parenting time with the two smaller twins. And the agency talks about ongoing, that he's going to continue to have this type of behavior. Well, the individual that was taking care of the children has passed away, and the mother's rights to all the children have been terminated. My client testified at trial that he is not going to he's not going to co-parent with a mother. And I don't see where the conditions exist at this time sufficient enough to terminate the parental rights between a father and his children statutorily. I don't see the evidence supporting that conclusion, even if there was some statutory grounds.
I certainly agree with you. There seem to be stronger termination cases out there. But I guess if we were to reverse, how would we do that? I mean, how would we say the court's decision that he failed to correct the conditions leading to out-of-home placement because he didn't recognize that the mother, you know, could not be a caregiver, you know, how would we reverse that? I mean, is there evidence to suggest that she is fine when the children are left alone with her? I mean, how would we reverse that?
I think you could make a finding that reasonable efforts were not made, And if you look at by the agency and that they need to continue to...
Well, what more efforts could they have made to make him understand that he couldn't leave the children with the mother? I mean, either you get that or you don't, right? I mean, you know.
I think my client gets it.
Okay. Is there evidence in the record that at the trial he testified that said, you know what? I understand I won't leave the children with mom anymore alone. Is there evidence in the record that he said that? Because the court seemed to really get hung up on not believing him for, you know, whatever reasons, and you know, we don't have to talk about that. But is there evidence in the record that would support that, you know what, it took me a while, but I get it. Did he say that?
No, he did not
okay.
say that.
Okay. So, I mean, I agree with you. I gave him tamales, I mean... I don't know, that doesn't do anything for me, but whether he appreciated or not that the children can't be left with mom, because in the past, mom left them with the person who had dementia and then has some of her own issues, that does seem to be a supportable grounds for termination. And so if we were gonna reverse, we'd have to find a reason to say, well, not that one either.
And Your Honors, I would, you know, eventually you have to, a court needs to find that it's in the best interest of the children. And if you look
right.
at the best interest of the children, evidence relating to the termination must address conditions that exist at the time of the hearing, and it must appear that the present conditions or neglect will continue for prolonged indeterminate times. If you look at the evidence that the court considered, they did not once call and have the foster parents testify. There's a history of the foster parent who is an aunt to the mother in this matter, and the mother had made some allegations that she was sexually molested in her care. And I see that my time has ended, but I request that this court consider reversal of the district court decision in this matter.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Cantu. Thank you very much, Ms. Johnston. The matter was well argued
and
well briefed.
Thank you for your time.
That being our last case for today, we are adjourned.